Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 138, week 4 in the SEC, recorded Thursday, September 25th, 2014. This week, Shane Bailey and Britton Burton discuss the craziness that is the SEC East. After Alabama dismantling Florida, Missouri's loss to Indiana, South Carolina's win against Vandy despite two huge kickoff returns, and Georgia's dominant performance against Troy, the East is anyone's guess. They also look at Auburn's trip to Kansas State and Mississippi State's statement win in Death Valley. All this and more in this week's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is your host, Shane Bailey. Back to do another week's worth of look back and look forward on the SEC. We're getting right into the heart and meat of what SEC action's all about. We're starting to see some things, starting to get some patterns, maybe. I don't know. We'll kind of talk through some of that and see what we think as we get into this. But it's been an exciting and eventful SEC 4-week run, I will say. We will, if you're new to this program, we'll do a little quick rundown. We do this somewhat from a fan's perspective. We all have some loyalties that join this. We had a lot of technical difficulties on our original record date. So it's just me and my co-host tonight, Britton Burton. Welcome, Britton.
Hey, good to be back. Sorry it didn't work out last night to have more people on.
That's okay. We are happy to at least get something out this week, and they're going to miss out on some good conversation. So it's their loss, the people that are listening's gain. But we do this weekly, and our pattern is we're going to look back and take a look at the week that happened last week and tell you what we think about some of the games. Then we're going to look forward at the week's matchups, and there's some good matchups this week. So there were some good matchups and good games last week, so there's lots of fun things to talk about. We do this, like I said, every week. You can find it on Twitter. As a link, you can find it on YouTube, where we do a video version of this. You can find it on our website, on Google Plus, on iTunes, on Stitcher Radio, anywhere you can find a podcast, you can find this recording. So go out there, find it, subscribe, like, comment. You know, it seems like we're getting a new follower wanting to ask questions every week. So we always love to have conversation going on, so we appreciate you reaching out to us, and we'll do our best to reach back out to you. But let's get right into things, Britton. And, you know, there's a couple of games, even though it's some marquee programs, we can really kind of gloss over from last week. As much as I want to say there's a lot to talk about with Texas A&M playing SMU, I don't think you really got a lot.
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, A&M continued their offensive onslaught, but SMU has proven to be not very much of a of an obstacle for anyone so far this year. So I don't know how much you can get from that.
Yeah, and the same thing is going to apply to the Georgia-Troy game. You know, Georgia hit the throttle quick and never let off, really. They had only scored 7 points in the third quarter. But ended up with 66 points total. So, you know, Georgia easily won against Troy. That program, we, you know, from the beginning of the season, they were my East lock, and the East is just now, as we go through this conversation and this podcast, I don't know what to expect out of the East anymore. It's not bad. It's not mediocre, but it's definitely not what you're seeing out of the West. And if I were a team that was going to be competing, truly competing for an East title, I would be a little scared because, you know, now the conversation everywhere I've heard is if there's two SEC teams, they might both come from the West, even though they're beating up on each other. And I'm starting to think that they might be somewhat right. But, you know, there's a lot that's going to be played out over the next couple of weeks as you look at schedules on the East side. And there's still a chance for someone to really rise, get things together, and become the dominant force over there. But, you know, the East, it's just so hard to figure that one out.
I totally agree. It's like you said, it's not that it's a bad division, but the balance of power is so in favor of the West right now. It's funny how that has changed from a decade ago, where the West was terrible and the East was so dominant. But I still feel like Georgia is the best team in that division, even though they somehow managed to lose to South Carolina. But I also feel like, you know, teams like Tennessee and even Florida, who, especially after Saturday, I really don't think is that good. Maybe even Kentucky, not that they're going to win the division, but all of a sudden teams like that, who you thought coming into the season, you know, it was really a two-team race between South Carolina and Georgia. And I don't know about that anymore. I mean, I think some of these lesser teams that we weren't really considering are going to play a role now, whether it's winning the division or just being a spoiler to someone who should win the division, which is probably the more likely scenario. It's going to be a lot more interesting now. It just seems wide open.
Yeah, I don't know if you ever catch it, the Missouri Net Sports, Bill Pollack, he had me on last week to talk about the SEC East, and it was before the week's action. It was actually even before Auburn played Kansas State. And I'm sitting there talking about all these things and talking about the next 3 weeks coming up, where you're really going to get an idea of what's going to happen in the East, because Missouri, over the next 3 weeks, they play South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida. So something is going to shake out right there. Whether it's and Missouri totally surprised me losing to Indiana. Indiana had a good offense, yeah. but for them to lose that game, you know, I was saying to Bill, that is Missouri going to do what they did last year and just sneak up on everybody? Because for SEC fans, we still don't give Missouri credit for being a good team, if they are a good team, because they're kind of stuck up in Columbia, Missouri. They're not in the same conversation. You know, A&M came in with that huge splash and with Manziel and all the hype, and so they're able to really grow and move from that, and they've not missed a beat and put some huge numbers up. So all of a sudden, Texas A&M is still getting conversation, where Missouri was able to fly on the radar. They had four realistically winnable games. We all, when we did our preview, had Missouri as 4-0 going into this slate of action. And then for them to come in and to lose to Indiana, now it's like that's really thrown what's going on in the East, you know, because they've got South Carolina at South Carolina, and so you can't say at Columbia, because you don't know which one you would be talking about. But if you look at that game, and we're kind of jumping ahead, but you know, as much as I think Missouri needs to win that game, South Carolina also needs to win that game. And especially after last year, you know, I mean, they barely squeaked by with Missouri, so they're not going to think that Missouri's not a good team. So they're going to be coming into this game, I think, really prepared to play against Missouri. And the way that's all fallen out, I think it looks bad for Missouri coming up for Saturday, and for them to lose two in a row, it could be really bad.
Yeah, that loss by Missouri is. That's bad. I mean, as much crap as we and everybody, national media, gives the Big Ten for how bad they are, and Indiana is, and I think always will be, one of the worst teams in that league, to lose at home to Indiana and to give up nearly 500 yards of offense while you're losing to them, that's just a shocking loss. I don't think there's any other way to put that. I think we agreed that we weren't really sure what we were going to get from Missouri this year. And even after the first 3 weeks, we still weren't sure, because they hadn't really played anybody that scared you a ton. And so, and last week, I think we even said, even after they wallop Indiana, we won't really know what they are. And then they lose to Indiana.
So, I know.
So now what do we know?
We know no more than we started at the beginning of the season with Missouri. But the good news is we will know what Missouri brings to the table over the next 4 weeks, because they have a bye sandwiched in there. But, you know, having South Carolina, then a bye week, and then Georgia, then Florida, you're really going to be able to determine what happens that way, what's going to happen in the East. I think that's going to play out a lot right there. Then, you know, shortly after that, you're going to have Florida playing Georgia, And by November 1st, you're going to know what the East is going to look like for sure. But I think October is vital for shakedown for Missouri. If they want to try to do what they did last year, you know, this is their opportunity over the next 4 weeks with those three games coming up. And what about, you want to talk about the first game of the week, which is already a week ago now, and that was Auburn headed into Little Manhattan to play Kansas State, you know, and squeaked that one out.
I don't know about you, but that was shocking to me. I really, really thought Auburn was going to just wax the floor with Kansas State. To see a team, and now granted, it's comparing this year to last year, which is always a dangerous proposition, but a team that just ran through everyone in the SEC last year, including a couple of really good defenses, to see them get shut down the way they were by a team that we know has inferior athletes, it was shocking. And I think what really happened and what we have seen early is that Auburn is really missing Cam Robinson, Alex Cozen, the left guard that was hurt, and then Jay Prosh, their kind of H-back, fullback hybrid guy that cleaned up a lot. And they were not able to win first down. I mean, last year they were able to run halfback dive plays on first down and get 7-8 yards consistently. And their offense was consistently not all season, but starting around the time they got hot, about a quarter of the way through the season, was in 2nd and 3, 3rd and 1, you know, at seemingly every single possession. And Kansas State was winning first down and putting them in 2nd and 9, 2nd and longer than 9, 3rd and longs. And what we saw was them trying to throw the ball with Marshall when he's not ahead of the chains and doesn't have you on your heels trying to defend the run. And we knew last year that wasn't his strength, but they never really had to go to it. It didn't get exposed because that running game was so good. And Kansas State did expose that. Now, whether or not Auburn was just kind of off, or if Kansas State gave the blueprint, or they're just not as good at running the ball, I don't really know yet. I don't think we know until we see more. But it was shocking to me.
I think it's a little bit of everything. And when you add all of those little things up, that's the way you have the performance you had Thursday night. Because you also think that, and being in the SEC country, I don't think we give Kansas State enough credit. But playing in their home field has always been a tough place to play. I mean, even when you talk about the dominant programs that come into Kansas State in the Big 12, they have always had issues playing Kansas State at Kansas State over the last decade or so. I mean, it's just a tough place to play. It's a very good crowd, even though it's a small crowd. It's probably like a Vanderbilt stadium size crowd, but it's all Kansas State fans. And so you have that electric atmosphere. You add all those deficiencies that Auburn has. You have a run game that's not quite as effective as it was last year. You're going to get what you have, what we saw on the field. You know, I've been slammed on the podcast by some of our listeners saying we're not giving Auburn enough credit. And we might not be, but I'm still not putting them ahead of Mississippi State or Ole Miss right now. And I might put them ahead of LSU, and so that would have them fourth in the West. But I'm not having them able to compete against Alabama for the West title, or maybe even Mississippi State the way they looked. And we'll talk about that game here in a minute. But, you know, it was a great game to watch. It's just, I think you did see a little bit of a blueprint that you can use to help stymie what Auburn brings to the field and slow that tempo down just a little bit. So,
well, the interesting thing on the blueprint thing, I was wondering as I watched the first half, and then as I continued to watch and the ESPN commentators were breaking it down more, I don't know if it was as much of a blueprint, because K-State wasn't doing anything schematically that was groundbreaking. And in fact, they had six guys in the box a lot. They weren't like committing, you know, 8-9 guys to the line to completely shut down the run.
But they were ready for the, I think the scheme was they were ready for the speed.
Yeah, they were prepared for the speed, and it seemed like they, you know, a Bill Snyder team, the one thing we definitely know about them is that they're a disciplined team, and they play their assignments well, and they don't make mental mistakes a lot. And that seemed to be all it was. And last year, Auburn was good and it was dominant enough up front that doing that wasn't enough because they could just whip you. And it looks like doing that this year may be enough because they're not as dominant on the line of scrimmage.
Let's face it. Auburn won a lot of games, both national championship years, with Cam and with Marshall, by exactly what you said, getting breaks and taking advantage of situations where players in the wrong situation. Look at the Iron Bowl last year. It's a prime example of them being able to take advantage, or the week prior at Georgia. So Auburn has been the recipient for the last couple of years of things going their way. If you have a disciplined program and don't make a lot of mistakes, now all of a sudden you have a chance to beat Auburn, whereas they can exploit your mistakes. If you make a mistake, they're going to make you pay. It's just, can you keep yourself from making those silly mistakes? And that's what, and Kansas State for the most part was able to do that, and that's why they were able to hold them to such a low scoring amount and keep them in the game and actually have a chance to win that game at one point at the end.
Well, and they still got some of those Auburn breaks. I mean, Kansas State left 16 points, a touchdown that goes right through the guy's hands and winds up being an interception, and three missed field goals. Felt like Cade Foster was out there. Auburn did not look like the better team that night. Now, they made plays when they had to make plays, but Kansas State left a lot of plays on the field. One thing I will say for Auburn is, they're as interesting as it was to watch their offense struggle, their defense looked better than I thought that they were. They completely shut down K-State's running game, and K-State was kind of out of sorts offensively all night because they couldn't win first down offensively either. So, you know, maybe it's a little bit of offense regressing backwards and defense progressing forwards for Auburn, and it'll be interesting to see what they have against an SEC opponent
now,
other than Arkansas.
There is a third game that really was kind of a blowout game that I kind of missed, and that was Arkansas hosting Northern Illinois. Did we miss the boat on Arkansas or what?
They look a lot better than I thought they would.
Exactly. You know, I'm really excited to see some of their matchups coming up and see how this Wisconsin type ball, just run it down your throat. How will it work in the SEC? I'm getting excited to see that. I mean, they've got A&M this week at Jerry's place. That's going to be fun to watch that game. Then they get Alabama and Georgia. That's Arkansas's next three opponents. So that's another team like Missouri where, you know, is it smoke and mirrors because it's Auburn? Well, they played Auburn tough the first half and fell apart after the rain delay. You expect them to do what they did against the Northern Illinois and a Nickel State. But Texas Tech, you know, they're playing right now, did you say Oklahoma State as we record this?
Yep.
And they're losing. So, you know, maybe Texas Tech wasn't as good as we thought. So do we really know what Arkansas is putting on the field yet? I don't know. But I do know for a fact that over the next 4 weeks for them and the next three games, we will know what Arkansas is bringing to the table.
Yeah, absolutely. That Texas A&M game on Saturday is going to be fascinating. I still kind of feel like they're going to wind up getting run out of the building because I just don't know if they have the defensive athlete on the edges to hang with those receivers. But, you know, if they have a couple of those ball control drives and A&M has an untimely turnover, the way that they're playing offense and the way that they're just able to grind out 7-8 minute drives with 13 running plays. And we're really going to see, is Texas A&M improved against the run? It's going to be fascinating. I can't wait.
Yeah, we're going to see Saturday what both of those teams have. You know, now we're starting to get into the meat of the action, really starting to determine how off base or on target we are with some of these teams. The last game we'll talk about that was somewhat exciting for a while was the South Carolina Vanderbilt game. You know, to hear Spurrier, it was the worst game of his career. Did you hear all the comments? Did you hear his?
Yeah. He went all Spurrier in his Monday. I think it was Monday press conference.
Even on the sidelines, he's great. He is great.
Oh. I hope he never retires.
If he retires, I want him in the booth.
Yeah, absolutely.
How fun would that be to listen to?
He could take Lou Holtz's place in studio on Saturday.
I'd rather listen to him during the games. That might be more fun. But man, he's good. But Vanderbilt, you know, they were Vanderbilt. Except for a couple of kickoff returns for touchdowns.
Yeah, it's kind of fool's gold. I mean, it looks better than it was because of two kickoff returns for touchdowns. Now they did finally wake up a little bit offensively. I think they had right at 400 yards of offensive output, which compared to the first few weeks of the season and what they were beginning to look like, I mean that's great news. But at the same time, if you saw that game versus just seeing the score of the game, I think you realize that it's not that they were really hanging in. They had some big-time plays that are not going to be plays you can rely on week in, week out.
Well, here's where Vanderbilt really kicked themselves or shot themselves in their own foot was the last minute in the second quarter. Was it Friedback? Is that his name? The freshman quarterback?
It's something like that.
You know, he comes in. Robinette gets his bell rang, so he's got to do concussion protocol. I still haven't heard if he's playing this Saturday yet. But so Friedback comes in less than a minute to go, and he just throws a very untimely pick. Instead of going in with a 14-10 lead, now they're losing by 17-14. I think that really changed the dynamic of that ball game going into the third quarter, because if Vanderbilt could have held on and had the lead going into halftime, that's a whole other ball game. And the whole dynamic of the fourth quarter could have been different, because the way they played into the late half of the fourth quarter, where they decided not to give up, that might have happened from the start of the third quarter, and South Carolina never would have been able to put up 31 points in the second half.
Right.
But you know, the coulda, shouldas, you know, you make a stupid throw, you're going to get picked off in the SEC.
Don't you feel like that's on Mason maybe more than it is Friedback? I mean, do you put your young quarterback who really hasn't played any significant snaps in that situation with that little time left? And they were – it's not like they were, you know, past midfield. I mean, they were on, like, their own 35. Maybe you just kneel the ball there and you say, I'm glad that we're ahead 14-10 and let's take this to the half.
Yeah, but, I mean, like you said, they had less than they had like 50 seconds to go. They were on South Carolina's side of the field in pretty good opportunity with a couple of big plays to, at worst, get a field goal, at best, get 7 more points. And now if you get 7 more points and you're leading 21-10 – that's definitely a different mentality going to that ballgame. I think that it was poor decision making on Friedback for the decision to throw the ball he did, because that safety or corner was reading that all day long, and it was just a bad play. And I don't think that was his first option. If you look at it, you know, that wasn't his first option to throw to. So, you know, could he have probably thrown it away if that wasn't there? Yeah, recognizing where his defenders are, that comes with experience. You know, you need to make sure you're making calls that are going to be definite completions or safe incompletions for your quarterback when he's a freshman coming in that type of situation against South Carolina. And I don't know where that blame's going to fall, where that blame is to fall. That's my opinion. For what that's worth. Do that and bring me that in a quarter and you got 25 cents. So
yep. There you go.
We'll talk about your game next.
What a roller coaster ride, huh?
Alabama kept Florida in that ball game.
Yep.
That's all I can say.
Yeah, it's if not for the four turnovers, it's possible that Muschamp gets fired before he gets out of Tuscaloosa, because that could have been a 60-something to nothing, 60-something to seven type of ball game.
That score is not reflective of how ugly that ball game was.
Yeah. It's amazing that at, you know, midway through the third quarter, that game was tied at 21. I mean, when you look back at the stats and you think about the dominance in that game, it was tied at one point in the third quarter. Like, how is that even possible? But
I can tell you how it's possible. Alabama turned the ball over.
yeah.
But, you know, Amari Cooper, wow. And now, was it you last week, or who was it? Hey, I don't even know if it was me. I don't remember who said it, but we called that. That's exactly what we said, was that that game plan is going to be perfect. He's going to find ways to get his best player the ball. I think you said that.
Yeah. Kiffin has really impressed me with his ability to do that. And I was kind of holding my praise for him through the first three games, because they played three teams that had suspect defenses. So, you know, you didn't know how much of it was just guys who can't match up against guys like Amari Cooper. But Florida has a legit defense. For all their problems, they have a legit defense. And Kiffin called just an amazing game. I mean, the way he is able to get his players in matchups that are favorable and make reads and throws that are, I don't know about easy, but at least simpler for his quarterback, are very impressive through the first four games.
Yeah.
And Cooper is just the best player on the field right now.
And Sims proves that he's got an arm. He's got some accuracy. I mean, that was except for the turnovers, and some of those were, I don't think all of those were Sims' fault. I can't remember how all four of those occurred now. But you look at the way Kiffin called that ball game, and you said that, is that Kiffin's going to find a way to set it up so that Cooper is able to get the ball in space. And he got space in spades. I mean, there were times there wasn't a defender within 20 yards of him, and he is in full sprint mode, and that ball is right where it needs to be. That score is just so deceiving to me. When you look at it, you go, wow, Florida played them close, but they did not. Alabama let Florida play them close. And I know Saban had to be irate about that.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, Florida didn't sustain a single drive, really. I mean, they had, I don't know what the number is now without the stats in front of me, but 7, 8, 9, three and outs. And other than the two possessions that we gave them inside our 30-yard line because of turnovers, you know, they didn't string more than two first downs together on many drives that I can think of. And it was just a big problem for Florida offensively. Driscoll, I was very encouraged by the defensive performance by Alabama, obviously, but I still think a lot of that just had to do with Florida being somewhat inept offensively and Driscoll just not being that good of a college quarterback. The defense held tough for a while for Florida, and then they finally started breaking down in the second half when they'd just been on the field too long. And Alabama was able to gash them with 10, 12, 15-yard run plays for chunk yardage. Florida's in for a long season.
it's going to be scary to see what happens as it all shakes down for Muschamp. And I think he will end up like Kiffin, maybe. At worst case scenario, if he does lose his job, he's going to end up like Kiffin. And go somewhere and be able to be a defensive coordinator again. And that program's going to have an incredible defense.
Right.
You know, because Kiffin at this on this track is going to be a head coach again in the next couple of years. Somebody's gonna take a flyer because the guy can coach offensive ball.
Yeah, if he continues on this pace, someone definitely will. And he's gonna have to prove that he can keep his mouth shut and not be such an idiot, you know, in the public eye. But
good news is at Alabama,
coach offensive football.
And good news at Alabama is he doesn't have to worry about that. He doesn't get to talk.
Yeah.
So that might be a good thing. Or a bad thing for Alabama because he won't be there long.
I think most of all, I just have to give Blake Sims some props. I mean, a guy who no one thought had any chance at the starting job after that spring game. Even coaches are now saying how surprised they are at how well he's played. I mean, just a huge, pleasant surprise for Alabama fans. And the thing that really sums it up is when he went down with that shoulder injury in the third quarter on that, 20-yard scramble, I was panicking. And I never thought I would be panicking about Blake Sims having an injury. So that says a lot about how far he's gone.
Yeah, and when Coker came in, he didn't look bad either. But it is now Sims' team, and that's – I don't think that any of us – I don't even think Saban saw that coming – week one going into that game.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think everyone thought Coker just had to get comfortable and then it would be his team, but Blake Sims is taking it by the throat.
Yeah. So the last game of the week from last week, poor Blair Smiley can't make it on here.
I hate that we can't have him on here. Although he said he didn't even watch it because he's so tired of losing.
So Mississippi State goes into Death Valley and just destroys LSU. And that's another score that's not really indicative of the way that game came out, because midway through the third quarter, there was second and third team defense playing for Mississippi State for most of that game, that second, for most of the fourth quarter for sure. And then to let LSU come back and score 19 points and have a last second shot to win that game was crazy. And Mississippi State is just unlucky enough for them to have lost that game. But realistically, they were in control of that game the entire time except for when their second team came in.
Yeah, they absolutely dominated. It was not a fluke. The fluke was that it got close at the end, kind of like you said. I mean, they absolutely dominated. They looked outstanding. LSU has quarterback problems, although maybe those were alleviated a little bit in the end. I'm not sure. But isn't it just so Dan Mullen? I think he went to his backups a little bit early there. Like, I understand you're killing him, but he needed to keep the starters in just a little bit longer. And they almost, like you said, it was Mississippi State's luck that they would find a way to blow that.
Yeah, I mean, them and Kentucky, we could both talk about that for hours, all the missed chances that those two programs have had over the years against big games. Was it the first time since 1990 they'd beat a top 10 opponent or something ridiculous like that?
Something like that.
I mean, just the number of records that went, and for LSU to have never lost to an unranked program, I think's what the stat was at Death Valley under Les Miles. That's, to me, a little misleading, because I don't think Mississippi State should have ever been out of the top 25.
Yeah,
that's where the disservice, and we've said that from the beginning, is that, you know, they should have never been knocking on the door for top 25. They needed, and nobody had given them any consideration. And so that statistic, while it's good to throw out there, is bogus in my opinion, because Mississippi State was a top 25 program the entire season. It wasn't an upset in that manner that it was an unranked team coming into Death Valley to beat LSU. Dak Prescott was just incredible. You know, he had the leadership, and I like Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow picked it out on their morning show on Saturday. He says he's just got a will to win. And somewhat like Tebow did. You know, Dak wanted to put that team on his shoulders, and when guys were covered up, he would find a way to buy time till somebody got opened. You know, if there wasn't anybody open and he could find a seam, he was going to run the ball. And he really took that program and took that offense on his shoulders and just dismantled LSU's defense.
Yeah, he really did. He showed off the entire package. By the way, did you ask Blair what I texted him?
I did, but he never replied back.
This is the ultimate, man, I wish I had said this on the podcast so I could totally take credit for it, but I didn't have the guts to say it. I wound up just texting it to Blair on Saturday morning. I said, Dak Prescott goes for 375 total yards and accounts for 4 touchdowns to pull off the upset victory. Do you know what his final total yardage was?
I don't. I know it was up there.
373, but he only accounted for 3 touchdowns, so I just missed.
Oh, man. Well, in the week before, he threw for a touchdown, passed for a touchdown, and ran for a touchdown.
Yeah, so I figured accounting for 4 was a safe bet.
Did I say pass, catch, and run? Did I say that the first time? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember if I said catch. I thought I said – some way I said ran twice. But, yeah, that's – so, I mean, he's the whole package. He's tall. He's fast. He's big. He's everything you want in a quarterback right now, and he fits Dan Mullen's system. Dan Mullins has to be just salivating and crying all at the same time because Dak Prescott's gone after this year, and what's going to happen next?
Yeah, and he's got a little bit of that Johnny Manziel in him, in that when the play breaks down, he's able to keep things alive and make off schedule plays as good as anybody. I mean, that one long touchdown throw he had. Was because he kind of deeped in the pocket and rolled out, broke a tackle, and threw it downfield to a running back. You know, he's a load to bring down. They can use him in the power run game, but he can also make the throws. If he stays healthy, Mississippi State is in the mix all season.
Yeah.
And their defense is good.
No, I can't disagree with anything you said. So let's switch gears now and kind of quickly go through some of the games this week. LSU gets to rebound against New Mexico State, who's 1-0 in the Sun Belt. I don't think there's going to be a problem with LSU winning that game. So they're going
I don't think there's a problem, but the interesting thing will be who starts at quarterback. Harris may still be hurt. That may decide it for them, but you know, they've got a quarterback problem. So they've got to start sorting that out, and it's going to be interesting to watch that against a lesser opponent because they've got more tough games.
Yeah. After that quick breather, it gets hard for them the rest of the way out. Let's see. I'm looking at them now. Yeah, so they go to at Auburn, at Florida, Kentucky, then Ole Miss is their next stretch. That's their stretch after this New Mexico State game. You know, you would at the beginning of the season say that, well, 3 of those games are tough. But even Kentucky's going to be a tougher opponent for them if Kentucky continues to play the way they are. That could be potentially 4 tough matchups for them coming up over the next.
Yeah, and right now what Mississippi State was able to do, if any of those teams are able to shut down the run, you have to like their chances unless they get vastly improved quarterback play, because right now they're not able to beat you unless they're able to bludgeon you with the run, and Mississippi State wasn't having it.
Yeah, no, you're completely right. If they can stop that run, they don't have the quarterback play currently the way the LSU set up right now to be able to win a ball game, at least an SEC ball game that we're talking about. So
right.
New Mexico State, I don't think that's an issue. I think they start a new win streak at Death Valley. So another game that at the beginning of the season we looked at and said, all right, no need to talk about it, it's a win, and that was Memphis going to Ole Miss. But, you know, Memphis has turned out to be a decent program. I still think Ole Miss is going to, at the end, pull that one out and start to run away with it, but and that one might be closer than people thought throughout most of the game.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to watch a Memphis program who's been awful for years. Like one or two win types of awful. Be very much improved this year. I think the talent disparity will show itself, and Ole Miss probably handles it, but it could be a little closer than we expected.
And what was their loss? Was it Virginia, UCLA? Who was it? I mean, it wasn't just a slack.
Yeah, they lost to UCLA, but it was
close. A close game.
Yeah.
Was that the one that Neuheisel came? No, that was Texas that Neuheisel came in.
Yeah, that was Texas.
So, I mean, even then, even their one loss, it was a close game against a really good program. So, you know, that's going to be a matchup that, like I said, at the beginning of the season, we all said, oh, that's no need to talk about that one. But that one at least deserves some eyeballs because that might be close for a while. Auburn versus La Tech. Don't think there's much to be concerned there with Louisiana Tech, do you? Am I missing something there?
I think that Auburn run game is going to look all world again against La Tech.
We'll go on and talk about Kentucky hosting Vanderbilt. You know, I'm excited to see what Kentucky is and what Vanderbilt is because, to me, these two programs should be evenly matched. I think Derek Mason this week said, you know, one thing they really like about playing a team like Kentucky is they have a similar defense. And so during the practice week, they're getting to scrimmage against, you know, the ones. The ones are playing the ones as opposed to a scout team. And so, you know, Kentucky's going to be similar in that way so that they're going to be able to match up defensively and see what happens. So I'm excited to see what happens, see what Tolles is able to bring to the table, see what Hurd can bring as far as a running game. Who's going to play quarterback for Vanderbilt? I think that if Robinette is out, that I think that really hurts Vanderbilt's chances of competing against Kentucky for a full four quarters.
I think it's a very interesting statement type of game for Kentucky. I believe they're a 17-point favorite, and with the way Kentucky has looked early in the season, there's reason for a lot of optimism. The way Vanderbilt has looked, there's reason for a lot of pessimism. And I think Kentucky needs to come out and beat them by 17 and look like the much better team to say, hey, we're not going to be a doormat. We're going to compete in the East here in the next few years. I would be very disappointed if Kentucky comes out and not a win or especially.
Man, I'm a Kentucky fan, and to win by 17, that's just – you're asking a lot. I mean
– You wouldn't put your money on that one?
I'm not going to put my money on that. I'm going to be happy with the W. You know, even if it's a three-point victory, a win is a win. Because let's face it, I think if you want to realistically look at it, whether they took those two punt returns back against South Carolina last week or not, there were at times they were playing South Carolina tough. And was that because South Carolina considered that a trap game and was looking forward to Missouri? I don't know if I could say that. But South Carolina did make their share of mistakes. Were those caused because of Vanderbilt, or was it just South Carolina making their own mistakes? We don't know. But there were things to take away from that game that Vanderbilt doesn't want to give up. You know, they didn't give up into the fourth quarter. 2 weeks ago when they played, you know, I talked about that heart that they had and how they didn't. There wasn't a give up attitude when they came from behind to beat that. Oh, who did they play? I'm trying to think here. Vanderbilt.
Temple. Or UMass.
UMass. It was UMass. You know, at the first half, they were holding their heads down. Were really not in that ball game, but found a way to come back in the third quarter. You know, play with heart and actually come back and win that game against UMass. So, you know, there's a lot of fight in that Vanderbilt program. And fight and heart can get you a long way and make up for deficits in talent. So Kentucky can't look past this and say, oh, we're a 17-point favorite. There should be an easy win. I think it is going to be I didn't think this at the beginning of the season. I picked them to lose, but I think that Kentucky should be able to win this game. 17's a big number.
Yeah, it is. For a team that hasn't won, or what has won, what, one SEC game in the last 2 years?
They didn't win any last year.
Okay. A team that didn't win any SEC games last year to be a 17-point favorite in a conference game, regardless of who it is.
I think they had two wins total last year. So.
Yeah, so that's a big number.
Yeah. Go Cats, I guess. That's all I can say. Tennessee at Georgia.
This is an interesting one, isn't it?
It is. I mean, to hear people here, and maybe they're just drinking the orange Kool-Aid, looking out of orange-colored glasses. Maybe I do that with blue. I don't know. But they think they're going to compete against Georgia. And I just don't see that. I think Georgia's had a little time to lick some wounds and to be upset with the way they've played and let that South Carolina game slip out of their hands. They got a lot of things right. I mean, what did Gurley get? 9 total carries against Troy. That's how much in control that game was. I don't have the stats in front of me, but I think I saw that. It's like 9 total carries. Wow. You know, this is what you – if you're talking statement games, this is where Georgia can come in and kind of make a statement, because people are talking about Tennessee being better, their defense being much improved, and they were improved. We talked about the Oklahoma game against Tennessee, how I didn't think Tennessee was ever really in that ball game, even though the score was closer. It's kind of like that Florida-Alabama game. You know, this is a way to really say, no, Tennessee isn't quite where the fans want them to be. They're where we all said they probably were at the beginning of the season. And I hope I'm right, you know, just because I don't like Tennessee. But but I also don't think that the talent's there. They're still too young to go against such an experienced program like Georgia. I don't know. What's your thoughts?
Two weeks ago, before the South Carolina game, I would have said that Georgia's going to win by 40. And Tennessee, you know, it was still a 24-point loss to Oklahoma, but they showed me a little bit that I haven't seen over the past 5 years. So, I don't know. I could see Gurley just running it down their throats for 200 yards, and then the other 18 backs that Georgia has adding on another 150 or so. But I could also see Georgia choking and kind of doing what Georgia tends to do, although maybe they've already done that for this year against South Carolina. They're definitely the more talented team, more experienced. But I just don't know what to expect out of the East right now.
And it's at the Hedges.
Yeah, with it being at home, you've got to feel pretty good about Georgia being able to handle things.
What's the number on this one? Do you know?
I was just looking at that. There, Georgia is actually a 17-point favorite, too. That feels like a big number to me.
See, I feel more comfortable with that number than Kentucky-Vanderbilt.
I agree with that, but I still don't know that I'm comfortable with 17. I guess if
I were playing, I wouldn't lay money on that one. That's a trap game for bettors.
Yeah, the one thing you would think is that Georgia's going to absolutely pound the rock and make that experience the front for Tennessee, and lack of depth along the front, you know, make them prove they can stop the run. And if they can't, then this could turn into a really long day. But I guess we'll see.
And then we'll look at – we kind of talked about the Arkansas A&M game already. You know, Ken Bielema's Wisconsin type, pound it down your throat, long sustaining double digit drives. Can that slow down this Texas A&M offense? That's the question, because when we've talked about Texas A&M, even at the beginning of the season when we were not giving them much credit, what we said was that their offensive line was going to be better. That their receivers were still untested. Unfortunately, that's not true. They are superstars. Kenny Hill is a very talented and able quarterback. We missed the boat on that. The defense, though, I don't think we were as far off base as we said. We said they're going to be young. I said they were going to be better than last year. And we all talked about, well, if they were, what were they last year, 96?
Yeah, something like that.
And they move up 20 spots, they're going to be better. But I think they're even better than that. But are they able to set up there and be able to handle those type of long sustaining drives? Because let's face it, Arkansas is going to just come in and say, this is what we got. You know it's coming. Now you got to stop us.
It. Yep.
There's no surprise with what you're going to get with Arkansas. But can you stop it? So that's going to be fun to watch. That one in the Missouri-South Carolina game are the two I'm most excited about.
Yeah, and I never thought coming into this season that I was going to be excited about watching any game that Arkansas was involved in, except for the one where they play Alabama. But it's going to be fascinating to watch. You know, teams like this, they can control the ball. They can put teams like Texas A&M in an uncomfortable situation because they're used to getting the ball quickly, scoring quickly, kind of controlling the pace, dominating the flow of the game. And if you have a 9-minute drive and all of a sudden maybe Texas A&M, you know, panics a little bit when they do have the ball and say, okay, we got to score because they're going to possess the ball for the next 8 minutes. Things can get a little squirrely for these hurry-up offenses. So it's really going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, that one's going to be fun. And we also talked about the last game for this week, and that's Missouri going to Columbia, South Carolina, to play Steve Spurrier's Gamecocks. You know, after their performance and as bad as they played against Vanderbilt in Spurrier's eyes, I expect to see a different type of program on the field in Columbia SC than you saw in Nashville last week. I think you're going to see a little less error happening. You're going to see more discipline, more ball control. I thought this game before the Indiana game was going to be much closer than what it is now, but I'm easily going to give South Carolina this win now.
Really? You're feeling that confident?
I am. I mean, Spurrier is notorious for not having two bad games in a row, right?
I mean, that's true.
And whether they won or lost that game at Vanderbilt, you know, it wasn't a good performance on South Carolina's part for the most part. There were some things they did well. It was definitely not kick returns, but, you know, there were some things they did well, but for the most part, they had a lot of deficits. So you're not going to get that second game in a row where you're going to get a bad game. I mean, if you look at their, you know, South Carolina played A&M, bad game. East Carolina, good game. Because East Carolina ended up being better than we thought they were. You know, then Georgia, good game. Now Vanderbilt, a bad game. You don't expect them to have a bad game against Missouri and Kentucky now. And then they're going to get their open date. So I'm feeling pretty confident that Spurrier's going to do that one. What's Vegas think on that one?
That line is at 5 for South Carolina. And that's interesting.
I would take 5.
I think I probably would too, but I think South Carolina's defense is not very good. And even though Missouri lost to Indiana, which is still just unfathomable, they still put up 500 yards of offense against Indiana.
Matty Mock is still good. He had a great game.
Yeah, Matty Mock is good. South Carolina gave up 400 yards of offense to a Vanderbilt team that looked completely incapable of completing a forward pass for much of this season. So,
all right, so I'm staying away from this one now.
You're what?
I'm staying away from this one now. You just talked me out. South Carolina's going to win, but you're right. Yeah.
I think they win, but I think it could be a close ballgame.
So that's it. That's week 5. We've looked at week 4. You know, it's nice to And I think this is the last week where you're going to get a majority of teams playing non-SEC opponents until, you know, the last week of the season. And then those are still good matchups. But for the most part, you're only going to get a one or possibly two programs getting one of those games. So most of them have those games out of the way after this week. So the week after that, for sure, it's going to be strong SEC.
Yeah, we've got all conference games in week six, six conference games.
So that's the kind of stuff we really like to talk about.
Yep.
I say that, then I'm looking ahead 2 weeks, and you get Charleston Southern, Chattanooga, University of Louisiana, Monroe, all playing the East. The East has got an easy week that week in the East. So, who am I to know anything, I guess?
There's some good games that week, too.
There's still good games. You got Florida, LSU, you got Georgia, Missouri, Arkansas, Alabama, Mississippi State, Auburn, A&M, Ole Miss. So the West is going to be great. That's great football in the West.
Yeah, it's going to be phenomenal. And we're at least through the part where there's only one or two good games a week now. Now it could only be one or two bad games a week.
Yeah. So, guys, we want to thank you all, and ladies, if you're listening. We don't want to just single it out and say that it's only males, because there are, by statistics, it shows that we have a fair number of women that listen to this program. If not, the husbands are using their accounts. Maybe that's it. I hope not, but you never know. Get your own account, guys. Come on. We want to thank you all for listening and coming in and tuning in every week as we do this. So, next week, we have a lot to talk about. I can't wait. I love being able to catch up with extra football games and all the extra stuff the SEC Network throws out to you every week. I was telling Britton before we did this, I haven't got to watch any football tonight, but I had some stuff to do this morning around the house and got to watch the Kentucky loss to Arkansas from 2003, a six overtime thriller. Jared Lorenzen. And so, you know, it's stuff like that that you, as an SEC fan, you just love to be able to go out there and catch that stuff. And it's always on. I like Feinbaum. I think 4 hours is a little bit much.
Yeah.
I think at some point that's going to have to change. I don't know why or what makes me think that, but, you know, it's the. And we don't take callers. I'm not saying that all callers are idiots or all callers are insane or all callers are stupid. But for whatever reason, Feinbaum gets a fair number of those. He gets a higher percentage than some. And so, you know, that's why we choose not to take callers. We don't have a team of screeners to get through all of that stuff. And I don't have time to be wasted with some of these people that get on the phone and just rant and rave, and I just don't want to get on a soapbox about this, but you know, that stuff tires on you after a while. And Feinbaum has great people on, great guests, and does great interviews. There needs to be more of that and less of the other. And I
totally agree.
And I think as time goes on, they're going to have to find a way to do that or cut an hour out of the show or something. I don't know, but, and they might, as more programming gets in next year, and they get more things in their library to show. So I'm happy that we live in SEC country and we get to talk about it every week, and we appreciate you listening in. And with that, we're going to call this podcast done.